I want two FedEx pets. I need two FedEx pets. I love two FedEx pets. I want two FedEx pets.
That was my favorite song on the jukebox at the Renmark. It was called the RCRC, the Renmark Recreation Centre. Used to go skating on
Friday
night. Did
you get counter meals and stuff there?
No.
Oh, it was like a rec centre.
Yeah, you
like
had to go
RSL.
To the footy club for the counter meals.
Right.
I think you New South Welshmen do RSLs a lot better than the rest of us, actually.
Oh, yeah, actually, Matt and I have Googled this. You can't get RSL clubs anywhere else in Australia, I don't think. But they're not as big as what they are in New South Wales.
I would definitely
like
agree with that.
Every community in New South Wales has an RSL club.
My dad plays bowls with the RSL.
Really?
Yes, and goes to the RSL club.
You can still get $5 meals.
Oh, that's so
even
good.
Even now.
Sarah, we're off track already. Yeah. We haven't even
Hi,
started.
Hi, everyone. Now I'm thinking about schnitzels.
I know. Snitties on Thursday nights. Hi, everyone. It's Kirsty Rice.
And Sarah Derry.
And today we are going to talk about expat divorce.
Mm-hmm. So something that we don't actually have experience with.
No, I haven't had an expat divorce yet.
No.
But I know plenty of people that have.
Yeah.
And I guess we should clarify why an expat divorce is any different than a divorce elsewhere. And a really good point, because I have been speaking to expat divorcees all week. And I have learnt so, so much, but the real thing for me was expat divorce is completely different, because you're not just leaving your marriage, you're leaving your life in many cases.
It's all about location, really, isn't it?
It's all about everything changes. Your whole life changes. Usually your housing is company related, your holidays are company related.
Schooling,
everything. So like, I think on a personal note, of a girlfriend of mine, when she got divorced, and even though they wanted to stay in the same country, she kept the housing, but it was with his company and he had to go and stay in an apartment. And then everything got very confusing, because it was all about, well, how do we get the child home over, you know, summer breaks, and how do we do those visits? And, you know, you basically had, they had to pretend to the company that they were still, for all intents and purposes, married. But
because they would have been on a family visa.
That's right. And the minute you lose all of that stuff, you lose your sponsorship, you lose everything to stay.
Yeah, you lose a lot of benefits, which are the reasons why you move.
In the first place.
In the first place, for those benefits.
Yeah. But that's interesting, says, about is that why you move? Because you showed me an article from The Guardian that I thought was absolutely fascinating, and it's called Warring Across Waters in The Guardian. It's written by Mark King. And the article is a few years old, but it's still very, very relevant. But a point was made in this, because they spoke to several different lawyers from different law firms in the UK, who all said that in many cases someone's planning that divorce before they've even moved.
That just really freaks me out.
Me too.
That's like, just nasty. Yeah. I'm very much romantic.
Yes.
So I don't like to think about prenups. I don't like to think, oh, if we get divorced, that doesn't...
No.
That doesn't bear thought for me.
Yes.
But to think that a partner might be thinking, right, I'll get her over to Abu Dhabi, or I'll get her over to Singapore, because it's easier for me to dump her there and she'll walk away with nothing.
Yes, and that's what this article
is
saying.
That's awful.
So it says that in expat circles, the wife may have fewer assets than the husband. For example, if she moved abroad with her husband's work, and you know that it was his work that took them there. And he believes that many women are coerced into moving abroad on the husband's intent on protecting his wealth or their wealth. It's not unknown for moves abroad to be the central component of a carefully planned campaign to divorce in the most financially advantageous way possible and start a new life with another party in an extramarital affair.
Yuck.
So they're saying that, you know, Joe Bloggs is sitting in the UK and he says, well, if I move to the south of France, and I take you, I can put up with you for a year and then I'll get rid of you and you won't be eligible for anything in the UK because...
And she's probably thinking, see, my mind is thinking, right, if he's planning this divorce, you know, a year or two out, she knows she's in an unhappy marriage, I would think.
Yeah, you would
think. So she's thinking, oh, right, starting over, new country, new life. Do you know what I mean? Their minds could be in two completely different... spaces.
Yeah.
She could be thinking, right, this move to the south of France is amazing. We're going to rekindle, reconnect. Meanwhile, he's been planning this all along.
Yeah.
I hate our fictional Joe Bloggs character.
Yes, I don't like him either. And the other character I don't like, and we've seen this here, is and this happened to a girlfriend of mine. She went home on the summer break.
Right.
And the husband's family was sort of saying to her, well, you should come and live here and you should come and live here. And she was thinking, why do they want me to come and live in their city? It wasn't even the city that she was originally from. They were in a different city. And she was thinking, well, why would I do that? And it turned out he had planted the seed with his family because he wanted to get rid of her. And so he'd planted the seed with his family and not told them that he wanted to get rid of her. He told them that she was really unhappy and he thought that she'd be much happier if she came home and was closer to them and that she'd have their family support. And so he had asked them to kind of try and coerce her into coming because he wanted to get rid of her because he was having an affair.
Oh, my God.
And he wanted to keep having it. And I have seen this now three times here where the guy is up to, and I'm sorry, this is not a judgment on men. This has just been that the three situations I know of, it has been a man each time. But he has been having an affair and it's so much easier just to say, oh, hey, I think you really should go home and get the kids set up and get them back at school or do whatever.
Yeah.
Because there's no confrontation. You just carry on and have this wonderful new life with your new partner and your wife smiles away and, you know, you just Skype from a different room. It's really quite...
Oh, it's disgusting.
Yeah. So I thought, Sarah, maybe we could start with my beautiful friend Vanessa.
Mm-hmm.
So I met Vanessa here.
Right.
And she, when I met her, she had a very young baby and a toddler.
Okay.
And she had been married for about 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
Her and her husband had been married in Australia for 8 years very happily, where she was probably the sort of breadwinner in the relationship and he kind of moved around with jobs and things.
Yeah.
But then when they started their expat life, he had sort of the full-time job.
He became the top dog.
And he became the top dog. And, you know, a lot of people talk about this where in an expat world, if you come and you're managing big projects where a lot of people have perhaps come where English is their second language and they're a little bit nervy and they're getting paid less, that you really become very powerful because you've suddenly, you're the ruler.
Yeah.
And a lot of times maybe that comes home with you, that you start treating your family.
I was saying to you before that as soon as Matt's car pulls in that driveway, he is no longer the king of his castle. He is walking into my domain.
I thought, how did you explain it? You said it goes you and then
this is how Matt
then
says
the cleaner,
it.
And then
like an absolute bitch, but Matt says it goes me, Sadie, the animals, the cleaner, and him down the bottom, which is not true, but he just knows his place.
Yeah.
And just because you've got a powerful job and people look up to you, that doesn't wash in my household.
So I want to kick off with Vanessa, and I started off by asking, did it come as a complete surprise to her? Because I should clarify, both of the women that I've interviewed for today's podcast, both of them, there were other people in their relationships, and it wasn't...
You sounded like Diana then.
I know. Well, do you know what? I was going...
I know this is such a serious episode, but when you said that, it reminded me of Diana's interview. Remember?
There were three people.
There were three people in our marriage.
Yes. Well, there were three people in both of these marriages, and both of the women were unaware that there were three people. So let's kick off with Vanessa.
When I think back now, you know, everything's great in hindsight and clear, and it actually went for a few years, and there was one particular moment now when I think back where it should have been the cutting point and the end. I specifically remember exactly what I was doing and where I was standing and all the rest and thinking this is over.
Do you mind saying what that is, Ness? What was it in hindsight?
Yeah, it was just basically I was just standing in the kitchen of our apartment and I was pregnant and I just... like things had happened in our marriage and a situation and I just thought this is over. You know, I don't want to, this isn't a marriage and this isn't respectful and everything that, you know, you enter into a marriage or a relationship or a partnership and just being quite clear and, you know, quite having a lot of clarity that this isn't right and being quite at peace if it was over as such. But then basically then just thinking, and this is going to make me sound really daffy, but about the baby coming and I can't be in this country by myself, you know, pregnant and then deliver a baby and all that sort of issues. And then that there were relatives booked to come over for Christmas, like 2 months after, you know, this time, this moment in time, and thinking, oh, where will they stay and what will they do and all the rest. So you sort of, all these things where maybe it's too hard and maybe it's not that bad, and sort of just keep plugging along.
Yes, yes. No, that's very true, because logistically leaving an expat marriage is the hardest thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just as much as emotionally, it's the whole logistical movement. So
Exactly. And you know, you shouldn't feel like that, but there are a lot of external factors that go into it, whereas if you were just sitting in your hometown or your city that you knew and all the rest, and where your residency and everything was wrapped up with the marriage or the partnership, then yeah, I think maybe some decisions would have been made a bit quicker than they actually were.
Was it a definite thing for you of, okay, I'm going to leave the country, or did that come with time? Like, had you initially thought, I'm going to try and work this out where we can all stay in the same country?
Oh, definitely. I would have much preferred to, it was a lot better scenario for me personally to stay in the country. Of course, it would have been better for the kids to be able to see their father, you know, obviously a lot more frequently than what they do. And for me, career-wise, money-wise, friendship-wise, support-wise, it would have been hands down a lot easier decision. However, the country where we're in, isn't favourable towards women and mothers in divorce situations and child custody situations, which is what I was mainly concerned about. And that got thrown at me. The third time that got thrown at me was when I decided, okay, you know, time to start focusing on getting a job back in Australia and getting me and the kids out of there, basically, because no amount of support and babysitters and all the rest make up for it if you don't have your kids with you.
Ness, was that something that's just stayed with you all the time, is that this guy could potentially change his mind at any time and I could lose my children?
Yeah, and, you know, I've had people say, I've only sort of been open about that fear factor in the last probably 6 months, you know, where I felt secure back here and everything. But I used to leave their passports with a friend if I ever went out of the country or just away for the weekend or anything like that. Like, it was quite a big, and I don't think it was an irrational fear either. And, you know, I've had people say, oh, he'd never do that. But you don't know, and you don't want to be that 0.01% person that it does get done to as such.
What were some of the things you had to consider when it came to you and the kids moving? How did you sort that out?
Basically, to get a good career for myself back here, a good job for myself, I should say, not a career, that was family-friendly or as family-friendly as it could be for my situation. And that took time. You know, I was quite specific about where I wanted to be geographically and all the rest, and I suppose that's why it took about, you know, 6 months to pin that down, because at the start I did just panic and sort of did this scattergun and just applied for every job under the sun, no matter where it was located and all the rest. And then I realised I was still employable in Australia and I could have options that suited me. So I calmed down and tracked back to exactly what I wanted and what would suit me, close to family and close to, you know, support networks. The kids were very young and they came back to childcare here and not school. But one part of me also coming back to Australia was based around the fact that my whole life had changed in my future, and what had been maybe, oh yeah, we'll work here for a few years and I'll get, you know, a nest egg behind me, which means like we can go back to Australia and I can start up my own business or something like that, changed back to the fact where I basically had to be employable and I had to have a steady and stable and good job, because I was the only breadwinner now for myself as such. So that sort of changed my future job direction as such. So that was another focus on getting back to Australia and getting back into the workforce, because obviously I couldn't have stayed in the Middle East, you know, indefinitely and work-wise.
What does your life look like now, post-expat life and expat divorce? How does life look for you?
My life is pretty small now, where it used to be quite big. I left behind a really good job that I enjoyed. I left behind a small creative business that was actually making money and that I enjoyed as well. Really good close friend, the ability to have time for myself, even though I had two very tiny children and a job, just because of the access to childcare and babysitters and things like that. It's a good life and it's a real life, and, you know, the kids are growing up healthy and sunshine, and, you know, we can walk to school and all the rest. But life is very, very busy and very tiring, and it's also affected my career because I've had to pass down job opportunities because I've got two really small children, and, you know, it involves travel overnight, which I can't do, or you know, just in cities that don't have any childcare for the next 600 years. And you decide to have children overseas because you're in a certain situation financially and you're able to and all the rest. And then it's sort of like, okay, it's totally changed and the whole scenario is different for me.
Without getting into details of your marriage breakdown, but it was quite scarring. Do you feel a little bit more empowered, though, that you... Because, I mean, I look at you and I think you're amazing because you just got on with it. Right from day dot, you just got on with it.
I feel empowered. I feel proud of myself in the way I've handled myself and the whole situation, and the fact that the kids will be able to look back and they won't remember a year when mum went to bed for a year and cried or things like that. It's basically just this happy move back to Australia, you know, where there's kangaroos in the backyard and all this type of thing. I also feel really safe and not scared of anything, because basically it's showing me I've got friends and really good friends all over the world.
So, Ness, there will bound to be a woman out there now who's listening who's in a very, very unhappy marriage and feels that she's stuck because the whole idea of trying to pack up kids and move. What would your advice be to her?
I'd say if you're not in any type of physical danger, do it at your own pace, even if it means a year down the track, but just keep a really good focus on what you want and what you want to do, and have a good plan and plan it out so that you won't be left in a bad financial situation if that's possible for you. But that said as well, I'd also say most of us are fortunate enough, if we're able to listen to a podcast, that we come from countries where, you know, we're hopefully not going to starve or be on the streets, no matter what financial situation we find ourselves in. And I'd also just like to say that you can do it, and don't be thinking that everyone else around you's marriage is perfect or that you've failed in any way, because one thing about this is I don't have any shame about my marriage ending, and I was quite open about that. And basically, when you're open about that, you realise that there's a lot of people walking around in much the same boat as you are, just making different decisions on how they deal with that scenario in their own life. So don't be thinking you're the only one out there in that boat, because you're not.
Isn't she incredible?
She's amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
She is.
I got a lot out of that. I think the fact that she was standing there, you know, hindsight is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
And she's standing there in her kitchen and she realises that it's over.
Yeah.
And that she actually felt at peace with it. I think that's when you know.
Yeah.
I think there's probably a lot of people out there that are maybe questioning and umming and ahhing whether the marriage is over, but she felt at peace. So she's done the right thing, clearly.
Yes.
But it was interesting that even when she knew it was over, that she was putting everyone else above herself. So she knew that family were coming. She was pregnant with her baby.
Yeah.
And she was still putting everyone else's happiness and comfortableness before her own.
And I think that's the thing, is that when you're living overseas too, like when she made the point of, oh, but, you know, we had family coming in 2 months' time, mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, the tickets are booked, they're coming, you know, how would that look? You'd be really messing everyone around. Mm-hmm. You know, you think...
That's something that wouldn't happen in a divorce situation back in your home country.
And I really want to point out with this, when you were saying, you know, she put everyone else first, she really did. Like, when, you know, he ended the marriage and so she then went and found herself a full-time job with her own sponsorship and her own housing in Qatar. Yeah.
Right.
And she had two really small children.
Yeah.
She then organised, you know, to get another woman to help drive the kids to and from nursery.
Right.
She, you know, she was just, I watched her in absolute awe thinking I would be a complete, you know, mess in the corner.
Yeah.
But she just got on with it.
Yeah.
And then they did a try all living under the same roof.
Right.
And it was...
Disastrous.
Okay. Because she was basically, you know, looking after the kids in a house with a boarder. Do you know?
Yes.
That?
Yeah.
And also there's that constant fear of you have no legal rights here.
That's right. And I think it really stood out to me when she said you need to plan your move.
Yeah.
So I don't know how long she planned her move for, but I'm guessing you would need at least 6 to 12 months to get yourself sorted before you say, right, see you later.
Yeah.
I'm gone.
Yeah.
And I think that's key.
Yeah, that's right.
Clearly, especially if you're living in a country like here in the Middle East or other countries where they favour the man over the woman.
Yeah, that's right.
Plan your move.
Plan your move and don't, as tempting as it is to fly off the handle and punch someone in the face and get on the first plane, don't. Be a bit more clever about it.
Yeah, yeah. And I loved it that she said, you know, she's not the mum that's lying in bed for a year crying. And again, she's putting her kids before her. So I just think she's a really brave, wonderful woman.
In both the women's case, because we'll talk to someone a little bit later, but I think, yeah, that's the point, isn't it, is that you have to be really conscious of what it's not just if you get divorced, what if your husband dies, what if there's some sort of accident, what if he loses his job.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's easy, you know, you made a point before where you said, I just don't want to think about it, I'm a romantic and I don't like to think about that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm the same.
Yeah.
I don't want to even entertain the idea that something bad could happen. But as women, you need to. You need to say, okay, well, what if the worst possible thing happened tomorrow? What would I do? Because in these situations, you've got to get back to work.
Absolutely.
You can't. So I think it was interesting, you know, when we spoke to the two women who'd repatriated last week and they both said the same thing. I wish I would have spent my time better. I wish I would have done more.
Mm.
And the same conversations come up again. I've spoken to five or six different divorcees this week and all of them said the same thing. I wish I would have got more prepared. I wish I wouldn't have let my career go.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, like I just... And I think you can still be... if you choose to be a stay-at-home mum, you can stay being a stay-at-home mum, but be clever about it. Make sure you're keeping your skills going.
Yeah, I think definitely. If you've left a career to be a stay-at-home mum and that's what you want to do, then go ahead and do it. But I think key is maybe keep updating your skills, maybe study a little bit more.
Yes.
Because you're right, you never know what could happen.
You don't know
what could all end tomorrow.
Yeah. I thought some other really interesting points that Ness made was to make sure you've always got 3 months' savings, you know, ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And she needed to have enough money for rent as well.
Yeah.
So I know with her, she found herself a full-time job that sort of fitted in with childcare and whatever, and she got that sorted out. But then she also had to get a house, get a car, get all of that stuff. So you're going to have, you know,
money
some cash
aside
behind you.
It really is a lot of planning.
It is. And the other thing is the legal ramifications.
That's right, that there's law firms in the UK that actually deal with expat divorce. So that's how big the number is. If there's lawyers dealing with expat divorce, that just shows that there's a lot of people, you know, breaking up. And, you have to know the rule, the law in your country, because if something was to happen here in Doha, we really have...
No.
We're up the creek without a paddle, big time.
Yeah, and that was a really interesting point that I got from all the women, because I know when we raised it on the Four Kids 20 Suitcases page, there was someone that said, I'll make sure you have a prenup. And
but see, prenups don't exist in certain countries. No. You know, they're not, you can't have a prenup in the state. Sorry, in the UK. I actually don't think you can have a prenup in Australia. You can have a financial agreement, but I actually don't know if prenups exist in Australia. So,
but then the thing you need to think about, because, you know, I wrote recently about a woman who did go through her divorce here, and through going through her divorce here, she lost her son, she lost her savings, she lost her work permit. She really came out of it in a bad way, and everybody said, oh my gosh, you know, she shouldn't have done it here, she should have gone home to do it. But the thing is, in both the cases of women I've spoken to with their divorce settlements, if your partner is living in the Middle East, he doesn't have to give you anything. So even if you were both Australian and you both went back and you finalised your divorce in Australia...
He doesn't have to give you alimony or anything like
that. No, he can say he will, and you can do it all through the Australian law and you can get it all written up.
But because they're here...
Because he is in a different country...
They don't force him to do it.
No, unless he happens to be in a country that's like under the Geneva Convention. Like if he was in Sweden, you'd be able to send the police around to knock on the door and say, hey, you need to pay up. But if he's in Qatar... You've got no hope.
Do you know what speaks more to me about that is that, yes, your marriage has broken up, but you're still a father, you're still a parent.
Yeah.
You're really, you're punishing your children because you don't love your wife anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. All right, so shall we speak to Nikki?
Nikki moved to Doha with her husband and under the guise that she would be able to spend more time with the kids. They'd been in the UK and she was going to be able to, under an expat lifestyle with him being able to earn a bit more money here, be able to spend a bit more time with her kids. So it became, it was a huge surprise to her when her husband said he had a change of plan. So we'll listen to Nikki.
Okay. I had absolutely no idea that it was going to happen. It was a complete, complete shock. I thought that our marriage was completely normal, but no.
Wow. So was it a matter of, you know, your husband just came home one day and said, I'm done?
So there was another person involved on his side. And I guess, I mean, the nature of his job was that he travelled a lot. He wasn't at home very much anyway. And I guess it was easy. I don't know, easier out here because he didn't have friends to answer to and family to answer to out here about where he was going and what he was doing. So there's that element of freedom a little bit. So, yeah, it was a shock.
Did you find out, Nikki, because he told you or did you just find out accidentally?
Yeah, I found out accidentally. And, yeah, so the kids were little. The kids were at the time, so when was it? Beginning of 2009. So I had a 3- and a 4-year-old.
Right. And Nikki, was it once you found out, did you think, right, that's it, I have to get out of here, or how did it, happened after that?
So at the time I was actually working part-time as a teaching assistant. I came out as a housewife, didn't really have any big plans to get a full-time job. I'd given up my career with Virgin Atlantic and, you know, I was here to raise the kids. So I was working part-time, didn't have enough income to support myself, but I knew that I didn't really want to uproot the kids. You know, we've been here for 18 months. They'd just settled. They were in a good school. I didn't want them to be that far away from their dad as well to take them back to the UK. I still wanted them to be near enough to have contact with him. I wanted them to continue with the lifestyle that they had out here. For the kids, I made the decision to stay in Doha.
Wow. And were you frightened, Nikki, for you?
Like, oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
It was terrifying because, you know, immediately the company said, okay, you need to move out of the company accommodation if you're no longer a family.
So where did you go? What did you do?
Initially, you know, we made the decision that we were going to live apart. He did continue to support me for a few months, could find somewhere to live and I could look for full-time employment. But being out of work for a little while and not having an actual skill, it was really difficult to find a full-time job that would support me. Also one that would offer me sponsorship and sponsorship for the kids and all the extra benefits. Yeah, so initially I carried on just working where I was. I started doing some part-time tutoring just to boost my finances and keep things ticking over. So I did that. I went back to the UK over a summer and I did my CELTA qualification, came back and started looking for full-time ESL job. And after about, so about a year after the separation, a job came up. Obviously, in that time, I'd kind of worked out the minimum salary that I could possibly survive on, because I knew that the time was coming that my ex-husband was going to say, I'm not supporting you anymore, I've given you enough time to sort yourself out. If you want to stay, and he said this to me quite frequently, if you want to stay, you need to sort yourself out, otherwise you go home.
Oh, God. And what did he think was going to happen to the children?
I know. Yeah, good question. But, yeah, so he wasn't, you know, he was happy to pay maintenance, whatever, but he didn't want to actually support us in terms of paying our full rent. Or oh. So, yeah, so I'd worked out everything that I would need to have in place at the very minimum. And luckily, very luckily, I found a job that was willing to give me the very minimum that I could afford to live on.
So, Nikki, living as, you know, a divorced woman or a separated woman in the expat world, mm-hmm. what was that like? Tell me a bit about that.
So you do find that you're a little bit cut off because a lot of the expats, but the lifestyle here is very family-oriented. People do things as families. So a lot of the things that my friends were doing and things that we used to do, I couldn't do as much, or I wasn't invited to as much. So I did feel, I did get a little bit cut off. And obviously, because you make friends as a couple, and then these friends have to pick a side. Just to compound everything, you have to go through all of the sponsorship changes. So everything that he had done for me as a housewife, so the ownership of the car, the Qtel, OSN, everything that you need the sponsor to set up, all had to be transferred over. So including my sponsorship for my company and the kids' sponsorship for my name.
How do you think the experience changed you from who you were when you arrived to who you are now?
Oh, my God. I arrived as... I was the typical trailing spouse. It was our first expat experience. I didn't even imagine having a career in Doha. It wasn't something that was ever on my radar, certainly being a single parent and having a career. Even at home, that's quite a scary prospect.
Yes.
But here, when you don't have a support network, it's even scarier. I didn't realise that I was as strong as I am. And actually, at the time, I didn't even think about it. And all my friends said to me, oh, my God, I can't believe you're doing this. You know, you've got, you know, you're so strong. And I was like, really? I'm just getting on with it. It's just I know what I want to happen, and this is how what I have to do to make it happen.
Nikki, did he end up with the person that he...
Yes. Oh. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it was meant to be. It's, you know, it's in the past. It's 6 years ago. At the time, my God, yeah, I was angry. But, yeah, you know, they're happy. The kids are happy to go and see them. She likes my kids. They like her. So that's what's important. I believe now that I'm in a much better place now than I was. I've met someone else. I'm happy and he's happy, and financially we're both secure, stable. So, yeah. In, you know, reflecting on it, it's good.
So slightly different ending. She stayed.
Yeah, she stayed. And he's no longer here.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So you think they came here thinking, well, it's all about his career and mm-hmm. I'm going to be with the kids. And then fast forward 6 years.
Flipped.
He's not here. He's in a different country with his new partner.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she has, and I won't out her for what she does, but she has a fantastic job.
Okay.
And this is something I was thinking of sort of career-wise. I think when you come with someone else's job, whether you're a man or a woman, when you mm-hmm. come as the, you know, that terrible term of the trailing spouse, sometimes it becomes all about their job and you actually forget who you are and what you did.
It's like I've said to you before, no one asked me what I did when I moved here.
No, but everybody asked Sadie's you what mum. Your husband did.
Yeah, I was just Sadie's mum and Matt's wife. No one knew that actually I had a really big job back home.
And I think over time you can forget that because mm-hmm. it's not visible either. It's not like
That's
you drive
right.
past the old office or you see the old people or any of that.
Yeah.
And I think career-wise, what all the women I've spoken to this week have taught me is you might think that your skills are over and defunct, but what happened with Nikki was, so she worked as a teacher's assistant mm-hmm. and then so for her the natural thing was, well, do I try and become a teacher? No, I don't have enough time to go and retrain.
Yeah.
So she went and did the English as a second mm-hmm. language thinking, okay, I'll become an adult teacher. Now, the job that came up was mm-hmm. with an international airline.
Oh, wow.
And what she actually does is trains people who speak English as a second language to use English in customer service.
Oh, fantastic.
So she is the perfect person for that job because she...
I've listened to her interview and I kind of think she's obviously been through hell.
Yes.
But for both sides, they've come out on the other side.
Yeah.
She's now happy, he's happy, and I guess you can't help it if you fall in love with someone else. Obviously, he's had an affair, but he's still with this other woman and they're happy. She's now met someone else, she's happy.
Yeah, she's going to get married too.
Okay, so, congratulations. So I don't think you can begrudge him that. I think he obviously went about it the wrong way.
Yeah.
And the whole sort yourself out if you want to stay here just absolutely boggles my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, good on her. She's doing something now that had she stayed in an unhappy marriage, I can guarantee you she wouldn't be doing today.
No, that's right. That's
so
right.
It's kind of almost like a blessing
in disguise.
Almost. Like she's just gone through absolute hell, but she's come out at the other end stronger.
Yes.
And better for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think so too.
That's actually a really good story to...
And I think that's the thing to remember. If you are out there right now and you are in a really miserable situation, you know, your time will come, do you know? And I think it's too easy to get scared.
What I've worked out from those two interviews, plan ahead.
Yeah.
And keep your skills going.
Yeah, and I think for me too, the other thing that really concerned me, and I think this is where women do start to feel stuck and scared, is all the women I spoke to all said that they were all fairly sure when their partner left that he wouldn't want to have full-time custody of the kids because it would ruin his lifestyle, right?
Yep.
Because he worked full-time, he had a new girlfriend, the last thing he wanted was a 3- and 4-year-old at his feet. But every single woman also told me that they would not have left him with the kids' passports at any time because when things start to get nasty... And
they do, don't they?
And they can. Yeah. And when you start talking about money and you're saying, you know, the kids and I need money to survive, every one of them said they were threatened at some stage where he said, well, I'll have the kids and you go, when things got scary.
Yeah.
So I think, and when you're, and you know, that's fine to make that claim if you're in Australia and he says, well, I'll take you to court and we will have shared custody. But when you live in the Middle East, that can happen. You have no rights. And, you know, I spoke to a woman during the week whose husband is now with someone else and he's remarrying and she has a child. And, you know, he let her know that, you know, we don't need you anymore. We're setting up a new family.
Oh.
And she does not have a legal leg to stand on. So... Yeah, you know, that's where expat divorce is very different than everyday divorce.
Especially for a woman.
There was one last point that Nessa made that I thought was really relevant, and she said that you be prepared for your family to be in shock, because she said the thing about the expat world with your family, they're only seeing your marriage via social media and the little snippets come home on holidays and everything's wonderful and you're on holidays and it's one big party. I'm sure that people see Greg and I when we come home and they must think that we drink every day, that we have oodles of cash because we're on holidays and, you know, we do. We get up and we entertain all the time and whatever. But it's not what our real life looks like.
That's
our
right.
real life is incredibly mundane and is all about waking up and getting kids breakfast and doing whatever. But one of the things Ness said she found really difficult was, you know, they'd had a very happy marriage in Australia for those 8 years and then things went pear-shaped when they were overseas, but her family never saw it. And so they were quite shocked and she was very hurt when a member of her family sort of said, you know, what are you doing? He's a great guy. You guys are so good together.
Yeah.
And she was thinking, you haven't seen what I've been through and what's happening.
And you know what I loved that Vanessa said was that she has no shame, because I would think, for me personally, there would be a lot of embarrassment.
Yeah.
I would feel mortified. I would feel like I had failed.
Yeah.
So I really like to hear that she said that she actually has no shame. And I think that's really good.
And she also said one of the reasons she doesn't have any shame is because once she came out and sort of shared her story, she said she could not believe how many people were in unhappy marriages.
Wow.
And they all told her, because she said, you know, she'd learned about people with addiction problems and she learned about, and she said, but that all came out once she said, my marriage is over.
Right.
But she said those people have chosen to stay in their relationships.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing, you know, when I think when this ended, she said, you know, don't think you're the only one going through this because you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that was her point.
Yeah.
Okay, we better get
interesting.
Yes, we better get onto it. Our little social media grabs for the week.
Yes, so this is a complete change of scene. My blog pick this week is called The Private Life of a Girl, and it is by a UK-based blogger called Sophie, and she actually also owns a small jewellery business.
I wonder what a jizzery
is. Yeah, I don't want to know. Now, you know me, I'm very visual. I like really pretty things. I love design.
Yes.
I love creative people.
Yes.
And that is what her blog does for me.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, she's just really incredibly creative, and her blog is just her creative outlet.
Yes.
And I love the name of her jewellery line. It's called Oh My Clumsy Heart.
Oh.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah, so I will put the link to Sophie's blog there.
Yeah.
And my Instagram pick, there's a girl that I've been following for the last 5 years. Her name is Holly, and she's got a blog called In the Fun Lane. And her blog, which was lifestyle,
right,
more focused around home design and things like that, actually led her to start flipping houses.
Oh.
So she would buy a really run-down house in Canada.
Yeah.
Renovate it,
yes,
make it really pretty, and sell it.
Yeah.
That, doing that and blogging about it has now led her to, I think she's going to have her own TV show in Canada about
like
flipping houses.
Yeah.
So her blog is pretty much fallen by the wayside because she doesn't have a lot of time to blog anymore, but her Instagram account is unbelievable. If you love a good marble kitchen with some type of pastel flat lay on top... She's the girl
she's
to follow.
One.
Like,
so
it's really, really pretty. It's called at In the Fun Lane. I'll put the link.
Yeah.
Really pretty stuff.
Oh, I'm going to go and follow
really,
that.
Really pretty.
All right.
Yeah.
Now, my podcast for the week was or is Startup is Back.
Yes, season two.
Oh, my gosh.
We love Startup.
We really do love Startup.
They were inspiration.
Yeah, I think they were a bit of inspiration for us saying, hey, we could do that.
Mm-hmm.
I love Startup and they are back. And so I listened to episode one this morning and
they're
covering...
They're following a different company.
Yes, and the two girls who are doing the dating company, like the link up. Do you think one of those girls has a voice exactly the same as Hannah from Girls?
Yes. Now that you say that, yes.
She sounds identical to her.
First episode, they talked about how they had a massive falling out.
Yes.
That hasn't happened to us yet.
No. It won't.
No.
We won't have that.
Do you know, because just off on a little tangent, we get a lot of emails.
Yes.
Where people think that, and we are really good friends, but like as if we've known each other a lot longer than what we have.
And we haven't known
each
other.
No.
I think that's what makes it work, though.
Because we're learning about each other.
Yes. No, I don't think we will have a big fight.
No.
Because I'm not going to do this in the podcast.
But I just found it interesting listening to that episode. It's about a woman that have started up this company.
Yeah.
And they sort of flash forward to the end of the season. It's only episode one at the moment.
Yes.
And there's been a falling out.
It's brilliant.
And so how they then obviously get it back together.
Because they captured what they were like at the beginning, what they loved about each other at the beginning.
Yes.
So I can't wait to see what they end up. Yeah.
Mm.
It's a tough one, right? Because they're all into the who gets how much of this, that, and the other. And it's tricky.
Yeah. It's good that we don't earn any money.
Yeah, we don't earn any money.
We don't have to fight over reals.
Now, someone pointed out to me that I told you last week that you needed to watch The Affair.
Yeah.
And I said how much I loved it, but I didn't say a thing about why or what it's about or anything.
Is it about someone that has an affair?
Yes. So it is basically about a couple or two separate couples and there's a fair, but
within the two couples?
Yeah, but they don't know each other. So it won't ruin anything.
So the story follows two separate couples.
It follows two separate couples and their different take on what happened. So it's a real mystery because the narrative over it is they're being interviewed by the police and the police are asking them, so you don't know what's happened or who's died or whatever, and they look different from when they're telling the story. So it's obviously, you know, maybe 5 years later or something.
Wow.
And so when they explain how they met each other and how, so you get the first one, you'll get, you know, I think it's Alison. So you get Alison's story and then you'll get Noah's story. And they tell the stories very differently about how they met and how it all happened. Okay, so I also wanted to say we are looking for a sponsor.
Yes.
Because we don't make any money. And we don't want to ask our listeners for any money.
No. There are those websites where you can ask people for money.
I know. Yeah. I know. We don't want to.
We're
do
not going
to
do that. Don't worry.
We want to find some nice big multinational corporation or something.
Worldwide.
Yes.
Like a Crown relocation or a HSBC or a big sort of medical insurance company where you have offices all over the world.
Yes. Or maybe if you have a business that you think needs an expat audience, because we have now just hit 20,000 downloads, which freaks me out.
Yeah, that's exciting.
So we've been going for 3 months and we've got 20,000 downloads now. So if you do have something that you think could be good for an expat audience.
Samsonite.
We do have the audience for you to reach. Yes. So if you or your partner, or if you're thinking of anyone, send us a note and tell us who you think we should ask.
It needs to fit in with all of our listeners.
Something that we can all relate to. Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's
Drop us a line.
Drop us a line. Hop over to our Facebook page or onto our website.
And thank you to everyone that's emailing us.
We're getting heaps of emails
I love it. And it's almost a race as to who replies first.
Yes.
Because there was a woman that emailed late last night and you got in first.
Yes. So we got a great review from Annie in Darwin, and it said it was like sitting at home with the girls. And I have to say, Annie, when I first read it, I did think it might have been my Annie because it was so...
Yes.
I have an Annie. My second is an Annie. But thank you, because you said you love the podcast.
And she wants to come to our blogging conference.
I'd love her to come to our blogging conference.
Well, Annie, let's get working with a sponsor and bring you over, Annie.
That would be good. An airline would be good.
Yes, Qatar Airways, Etihad, Qantas, Emirates.
Yes. So if you know anyone that has marketing pull in an airline, send them our way.
And Annie could come over.
Yes, I think so. Let's get Annie from Darwin.
Let's do a social media campaign. Let's get Annie from Darwin. I love it.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everybody.
See you next week. Listen to you next week.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.